This morning, our title is, What Works? With all the studies in our series, we've, just like today, even though we're talking about marriage, in reality, gang, all of these things, and I've checked them, I've checked each of these principles, it works for everything. It works for all of our relationships. So you might not be married, don't just check out and you know, put your iPhone on or iPod on or something and do something different. Pay attention here because this stuff works across the board in all relationships. I've tried to make sure that our studies have been practical, not just a bunch of platitudes and fancy language. My idea for today, it's a little risky. It's a little different because it's out of the norm. And if it's a good idea, I get credit. If it's not a good idea, I get credit. My idea today was to ask three couples in the church to share some of the things that they've found important in their marriage. And that's why we can come up with the title, What Works? Each person in the couple is going to share one simple idea that they have found over their marriage of something that is helped them. Before we talk about what works, it's not a bad idea to hear a word about what doesn't work. Mr. Johnson, you get the credit for this next one.
I did the choreography myself.
Some weight in your rear end. The dress you wear reminds me of my old girlfriend. And where'd you get those shoes? I think they're pretty lame. Would you stop talking? 'Cause I'm trying to watch the game. If you're a man who wants to live a long and happy life, these are the things you don't say to your wife. I planned a hunting trip next week on your birthday. I didn't ask you, but I knew it'd be okay. Go make some dinner while I watch this fishing show. I taped it over our old wedding video. If you're a man who's done that, a long and happy life, these are the things you do to live.
Solo! Okay.
Your cooking is okay, but not like mother makes. The diamond in the ring I bought you is a fake. Your eyes look puffy, dear. Are you feeling ill? Happy anniversary, I bought you a treadmill. You're a man who wants to live a long and happy life, that too. These are the things you don't say to me. You're a man who doesn't want to get killed with a knife. These are the things you don't say to your wife.
Work. Now, when the couples come up and share, it might come off like we are the experts. The experts speak. And I got to let you know, there isn't a single one of us who feel like we're an expert when it comes to marriage. In fact, we kind of consider ourselves just simply fellow travelers along the road. But I got to say this, that we are fellow travelers who have collectively about 92 years of marriage between three couples. You can clap, that's fine, but that's not the point. The point is, when we talk about things that work, it's okay to listen. It might be an idea that might be helpful to you. And I'm sure many of you have other things as well that work. We're not the experts. We know that the things we're going to share are just our things. It's just what's worked in our life, in our marriage. But I got to tell you, these things are pretty universal. And these things work not only in marriage, but in relationships. So pay attention. There is a precedent for today's format. In Titus chapter 2, Paul writes to Titus, he says, "But as for you, promote the kind of living that reflects right teaching. Teach the older men to exercise self-control, to be worthy of respect, and to live wisely. They must have strong faith and be filled with love and patience." Similarly, teach the older women to live in a way that is appropriate for someone serving the Lord. They must not go around speaking evil of others and must not be heavy drinkers. Instead, they should teach others what is good. In fact, these older women must train the younger women to love their husbands and their children, to live wisely and be pure, to take care of their homes, to do good, to be submissive to their husbands. Then they will not bring shame on the word of God. In the same way, encourage the young men to live wisely in all they do. So there's a place in the Christian life to learn from others. And I find it helpful from time to time to seek out people who might be further down the road than I am. It's not a bad idea. I learn also from people who are brand new. It's okay, we can learn from one another. Some of you have had great examples to learn from. Some of you have been raised in godly homes. I had a great set of parents that showed me a lot about marriage. I owe a lot to my mom and dad. But not all of you have had great examples. For some of you, maybe that's more what home looks like or what your parents looked like. That's I understand that. Church ought to be a place where you can pick up a few good examples to learn from. It's not a bad thing. None of us have the notion that we have perfect marriages, but we have picked up a few lessons over the years. And we hope that we might simply be, in a sense, a few beggars showing other beggars where to find bread. But before us beggars share a few crumbs with you, I've got some other stuff from real experts. And so here's some real expert advice, some surefire ways to make a person fall in love with you. Take notes. This might be the only thing you'll get out of the whole day. So pay attention here. One of the real experts says, don't do things like have smelly green sneakers. You might get attention, but attention ain't the same thing as love. That's from Alonzo, age 9. Okay, it's a tough room here, I tell you. Okay, number 2, expert, one way is to take the girl out to eat. Make sure it's something she likes to eat. French fries usually works for me. That's Bart, age 9. So pay attention, make notes. Camille has the best advice. She says, shake your hips and hope for the best. There you go. Okay, let's get into the real stuff. Dave and Lori Dunnigan have been married for 25 years. There you go. Dave and Lori, it's all yours.
Seems like just yesterday. Whew. You still look good, babe. She does, doesn't she? I had a full head of hair there, I think. Maybe. I want to talk about just something that might be simple, maybe too simple, but I want to talk about how important it is to be a good listener, to be a patient listener in your marriage. It may seem to be a very simple thing, but I think if we can learn to do that, it'll bless our marriage, it'll bless our relationship with our spouse. And this is one of the things that the Lord is trying to teach me. I'm still learning this, how to be a good listener, how to be a patient listener when I'm dealing with Lori. I think I'm kind of addressing the men here, maybe more than the ladies. I think men might struggle. I'm just speaking for myself. I struggle with it. But maybe as men, we might struggle with this more than the ladies do. So I think it's important that we learn to communicate with our wife in the way that she wants to communicate. That's helpful for her. I was watching a video recently about marriage, and the speaker was talking about how men's and women's brains are just wired differently. They just think differently. He was saying that, and I've heard this in the past, that in the course of a day, most women will speak about 20,000 words, where most men will speak about 10,000 words. So we're kind of at a disadvantage of guys. When two guys greet each other on the street here after church, we'd be out there. One guy might walk up and say, "Hey, what's up?" And the other guy would say, "Nothing," or "Not much." And that's just like, "Hello, how's it going?" That's the greeting. If two gals out there, one might say, "Hi, how are you today? I love your dress." And the reply, I mean, oh, thank you. I got it on sale at the mall over there in the Buena Park Mall at the Sears store. And they're having a big, you know, and they'll go on and on about. And then in some senses, they're kind of saying the same thing. But that's just kind of a difference I've noticed about how men and women communicate and verbally differently. Early in our marriage, well, we had kids. It was, I don't know, 6 years in or, no, it was, it took me a long time. It was 10 years in, I don't know. But I came home from work one day and Lori said to me, you'll never, I probably told you the story before, I apologize, but it's a good story. Lori, I came home from work today and Lori said to me, you'll never guess what happened to the van today. And up to that point, I think men and women are communicating the same, but if another guy came to me and said, hey, you never guess what happened to the van, his next line would be, I got a flat tire, and that would be it. But when Lori came to me and she said, you'll never guess what happened to the van today, and my instinct is crying out for what happened to the van. So she says, you never guess what happened to the van. And then she says, well, you know, I was taking the kids to school today. And you know how you go down Ball Road and it goes over the freeway by Harbor Boulevard? And right there in the corner, there's an Arco gas station. When you turn to the Arco gas station, I like going up to the first pump because it's really close. And she kind of goes on and on like this. And this is where I made my first mistake. At this point in time, I kind of looked at her and I go, honey, what happened to the van? That was wrong. So if you guys are getting in that position, what I want to encourage you to do is to be a better listener. And I don't even, you know, it's so long ago, I don't even really remember what exactly did happen to the van. But we need to make a choice, whether it's a man or a woman, to be a good and patient listener, to take the time to hear our spouse out and to listen to what they say. I think it's important. But I think for us guys, it's even more important because we just don't use that many words as ladies do. To be a good listener, we need to make a choice to be a good listener. It's something that I am constantly thinking about. The Lord is constantly telling me that I need to be a listener. Last night, Lori was working on the computer, and I walked past her, and I was going down the hallway to the bedroom, and she said something. And I kind of turned around, and I go, uh-huh, and I kind of thought that was it, but she kept kind of going on. So I was thinking, you know what, I need to go back and listen, you know, make sure I'm listening to her. So it's something that I struggle with all the time, and I know that when I do listen, I know you appreciate it, right? So anyway, it's important that we listen. I got a couple of verses from Proverbs that I think are really, really, really good. This is from kind of a living translation. It's called The Message, which speaks in current language. Proverbs 19:11 says this: smart people know how to hold their tongue, and just be patient. And Proverbs 21:23 says, watch your words and hold your tongue. You'll save yourself a lot of grief. So that's one thing that I've kind of I'm learning, just to listen and be patient. Okay. Here's my beautiful wife.
What happened to the van?
You know, I don't even remember what it was.
I don't remember.
I just remember.
It was a long time ago.
I should have just listened to the story.
One thing that's been helpful. I guess that's fine. It's fine. One thing that's been helpful in our marriage is learning to forgive. Forgiveness isn't always easy and can seem nearly impossible at times. Today, I'm not really talking about those big, ugly things that we do that can destroy our marriage in an instant. This morning, I just wanted us to think more about all the little everyday things that we choose to hold over our spouses that undermine and weaken our bond as husband and wife. Our marriages become like the houses that are built on the cliffs over in places like Newport Beach. They look beautiful on the outside, but slowly, over time, the ocean hitting the bottom of the cliff undermines the foundation of the cliff and causes the house to fall into the sea. You've probably all seen news things about those. you know the kinds of things we hold on to, like, he did this, she didn't do that. And last month, he or she said this and hurt my feelings. And, 5 years ago, they forgot my birthday. We keep racking up all these hurts, never forgiving. Then every year or every time we have an argument, we bring it up. And the sad thing is that the world teaches us that we are justified in holding on to these things, because if we don't, then who will? That hurt and unforgiveness that we hold on to so tight that we stroke and we feed will turn the love in our hearts to bitterness and resentment and a desire for revenge, kind of a he did that, so I'll do this sort of thing. 1 Corinthians 13 is the love chapter, and verse 4 through 7 talks about what love is. And in verse 5, it says, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, and it keeps no record of wrongs. On Thursday nights, Dave is leading a class through this book by Gary Chapman, The Five Love Languages. And in it, there's a section on forgiveness that I really liked. And he said, love doesn't keep a score of wrongs. Love doesn't bring up past failures. None of us is perfect. In marriage, we do not always do the best or right thing. We have sometimes done and said hurtful things to our spouses. We cannot erase the past. We can only confess it and agree that it was wrong. We can ask for forgiveness and try to act differently in the future. When I have been requested forgiveness, I have the option of justice or forgiveness. If I choose justice and seek to pay her back or make her pay for her wrongdoing, I am making myself the judge and her the felon. Intimacy becomes impossible. If, however, I choose to forgive, intimacy is restored or can be restored. Forgiveness is the way of love. The best thing that we can do with the failures of the past is to make them history. Yes, it happened, and certainly it hurt, and it may still hurt, but he has acknowledged his failure and asked your forgiveness. We cannot erase the past, but we can accept it as history. Forgiveness is not a feeling, it is a commitment. It's a choice to show mercy, not to hold the offense up against the offender. Forgiveness is an expression of love. So Dr. Chapman in here is basically saying that forgiveness is a choice we make, and it's not a feeling. For example, we choose to get up and go to work in the morning, even though we might not feel like it. While I was putting this together, I kept seeing a relationship between forgiveness and love. The ultimate example, of course, is Jesus, who chose to show us mercy and forgiveness. In Ephesians 4:32, Paul says, be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you. Also, John 3:16 says, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. Even though I'm talking about forgiveness here, I also don't want to forget to mention the importance of asking for forgiveness. We need to think about how our words and our actions affect our spouse and act accordingly. We each need to do our part in our marriages for our marriages to work and be successful, not just merely existing. Before ending, I want to make sure that you know that Dave have by no means got this all figured out, and we don't always do it right. After all, neither of us is perfect, and even after 25 years of marriage, we're still a work in progress. We just trust God, put our marriage in his hands, and keep our eyes focused on him.
Dan and Joy Looney, coming up on 37 years. All right.
Yeah, and just on February 25th, it'll be 37 years, which is amazing. If you look at those pictures, you can see that we were very young when we were married, and that's our wedding day. You know, with Christ in the center of your marriage, they can make it, even with everybody's parents and all of your friends are screaming, it'll never work. Today I want to talk about learning to speak to one another nicely. And I think that the key word in that is learning to do that. And it was my experience growing up, and probably like a lot of guys and women too. I know that girls learned how to be pretty mean to one another in school and stuff. But in school we learned defense. During games and things, tetherball, it could have been any game. One, maybe you were picked last, or you didn't do very well and people would tease you or whatever. You learned how to defend yourself with, sticking your tongue out or neener, neener, neener or whatever. We started developing these skills at a very early age, and what didn't take too long, I think it was like junior high where we turned those defense mechanisms into weapons and learned how to, what we would call capping or on each other or sporting. And with your friends, it got to be like a game and you could become very skillful with words and really learn just how much they can hurt other people. School, siblings, work, military, they helped us become verbal masters capable of slicing, dicing, chopping, and mincing our opponents in only moments. These skills need to be unlearned when it comes to having a good marriage relationship or even a good relationship with your children or anybody. Like Rich was saying, this isn't just about marriage. It's about relationships in general. A lot of us guys in here, I can look around this room and I can pick out guys that could slay you with a couple of words just because we've learned how to do that. And your marriage is not high school or the military. Your spouse is not an opponent. Learn to speak to one another respectfully. I think it's a wonderful tool to learn how to put those harsh things away and to also learn the next little segment I have here is that sometimes when something comes up, an issue or a topic, that makes you reach into your holster to pull out that weaponry, that verbal weaponry again, you can just put that topic off or put that issue off for a little while until that feeling subsides and you can deal with it as adults and respectfully and lovingly with one another. And I didn't learn that on my own. Joy actually taught me that by being an example of that to me. She showed me by doing this. Stop, don't talk to me anymore about it. And then I found out that later on, in a few hours or maybe even that evening, she would start to talk about it, and then we could get it resolved. But I thought that was very wonderful, and I thank you for that.
You're welcome.
So, am I saying everything right so far? So, I'll try and finish it. Okay, and anyhow, to end it, yes. Express yourself with your mouth, not with your hands. Okay. Allow yourself to put off until tomorrow what would definitely cause a conflict right now. They say don't put off until tomorrow what you can do today. But in some circumstances, it's wise to let it go until those passionate feelings of anger or whatever emotion you're having that's going to cause an argument subside. So use that wisdom. I want to read a verse here. It's Ephesians 31 through 33. And as the scriptures say, a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. This is a great mystery. But it is an illustration of the way Christ and the church are one. So again I say, each man must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. And I believe that respect and love goes both ways. I know the way it's listed here, but I want to give love and get respect, and I also want to give respect and get love. So...
For me, the best lesson I have learned concerning my marriage is that the number one reason I want to have a loving, sacrificial, forgiving relationship free from bitterness and anger with Dan or anyone else for that matter is so I can stay in close communion with the Lord. As much as I love Dan and love spending time with him, there is one other I love even more, and that's Jesus. Many years ago, like about 24 years ago, Dan and I had an argument right before I was leaving for church. I left the house mad, and I remember stewing in my anger all through the worship service. What's funny is that I don't remember what I was angry about. First service, I said, was probably his fault, though. Probably was.
Probably still.
I'm sticking with that one. What I do remember is that at the end of worship, I realized that even though I had been in a room filled with praises to the Lord, not one of those praises had come from me. Jesus was there, but I couldn't commune with him. Like it or not, I learned right then and there that my relationship with Dan had a lot to do with my relationship with the Lord, and I realized that if I wanted a close walk with the Lord, I also needed to have a close walk with Dan. We, including myself, do not like to admit that the reason behind most of our arguments is pride. We like to be right, and we want it our way. But 1 Peter 5, verses 5 through 6 says, "All of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility, for God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time." I'm pretty sure we do not want to be resisted by God, and we do want his grace poured out in our lives. Sometimes I think we have the idea that if we humble ourselves, let go, and happily lay down our will for our spouse, we're somehow losing some part of ourselves. We need to also remember that Jesus completes us. If we, by laying down our own will for our spouse, have a space or a void, Jesus will fill that void. He completes us. In Philippians 4:19, the Apostle Paul says, "And my God shall supply all your needs according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus." And lastly, I have a tool I use when I'm upset or angry about something, and I seem to want to hold on to it. I call it perspective. I ask myself, if Dan were gone tomorrow, if I knew today would be the last day I had to spend with him, would this be at all important as to how I would spend my time with him, or would it be a total waste of time? Asking myself that question always, for me, puts things in perspective. That's it.
Dan wanted me to let know that he's got dirty green sneakers on. It's our turn, and we just crossed 30 years this year, and Deb's going to go first.
Okay. Oh boy. I thought I would just tell true confessions. A few weeks back, the ladies on Thursday morning were going through Elizabeth George's book, and for 4 weeks we studied being a submissive woman. It was really fun. We're done with that, by the way. I don't want to scare any of you away. It was very difficult, but it was good. But when we were just finishing, and then like within a few days, Rich was coming up and asking all of us girls who don't like to be in front of people to do this. And I was like, oh, man, I have to say yes, but I didn't really want to. Sorry. Okay.
Timing is everything.
All right. Well, I want to read to you Titus 2, verses 3 to 5. Older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips, nor enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good, so that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, so that the word of God will not be dishonored. And I wanted to say that one of the things that I think really has helped me is being around women, especially Christian women. It definitely helps that they're Christian women, because you can get a whole different flavor from a Christian woman than from a regular woman. And I'm sorry, because I'm around them at work, and they definitely have different goals. You know, they can encourage you to stand up for what you want, what you need, you know, and never lay down anything, you know. So Christian woman is good. And there are things that other girls learn. You know, I guess I'm really kind of advertising ladies ministry, sorry, but it really is true because it's really for me too, and it really has helped me, because the things that everybody else learns, they've gone through, they share, and you learn from that. You don't have to go through it yourself. You can learn from somebody else's things. And the things that I've learned that God showed me, I share, and hopefully some others can learn from that too. And I think this works with the men too, so it's a plug for men's ministry too. You know, the gals pray for each other when you're going through hard things, and they give advice if you want to have advice, godly advice. And the women at this church are very, very real and just very godly. And I just really recommend these gals to you. They're just awesome. And, you know, I think, too, one thing that's really helped me is just having a Bible study regularly. We have homework, and we're learning things. And when you go, you try to have your homework done. So there's accountability, too. It's not like you're just at home. It's like, oh, well, if I don't read, it doesn't matter. No one will know. So there's a good thing just in learning the Bible, too, together. And I know this makes me sound like I'm very ill. Sorry, but it really is helpful to me to hear that other people have hard things going on in their lives. It really blesses me, I think, to hear that. It encourages me to know that I am not the only one that has rough things going on. There are other women, and it's actually kind of good because you realize that your problems aren't really that bad because there's people with a lot more problems. And I really was thinking how we all go through hard things. And it's nice to not go through them alone. It's nice to have other women around holding your hand. And last, I wanted to just share my Red Rover story. Sorry. Have you guys, who's ever played Red Rover? Are you all too old for that? I love that game, or I used to love that game. And I think it's what our women do for each other. And if I played Red Rover and I was the only one on the team, all by myself standing here, and there's the other team over there, and they come running at me, you know, Red Rover, send Connie right over. And Connie comes running. Of course she's gonna break through because it's just me. I'm all alone. But if I'm playing Red Rover and there's 10 of us standing here, we're holding on tight to each other, all next to each other, and we cheat and stand really close, there's no room to break through on your arm, then you can't break through. It's a lot harder. So I just love that picture. Just it's good to have us standing together, holding on to each other, encouraging each other so that nothing can break through.
All right. My topic that I've picked is the topic of dating. Where do I get this from the Bible? Well, I get this from Revelation chapter 2. We've talked in the past about how the relationship between Jesus and the church is just like the relationship between a husband and a wife. And Jesus writes to a church going through a rough spell, and he says, "Remember, therefore, from where you have fallen, repent and do the first works." Do the stuff you used to do when you were first in love with me, he says to the church. And you know, in a relationship between a man and a woman, even between friends, what did you used to do when it was new, when it was fresh? I think one of the things you used to do is you used to go out on dates. You used to open the door for her. You used to say nice things. You used to give her a flower every once in a while. You used to write her a note every once in a while. That's the first work. He says, go back and do the first works. I remember when we were first married, we received some advice from an older couple that was a few years ahead of us. In fact, they were like my parents' age. And they were watching us get involved at First Baptist, getting all involved in ministry. I was a youth pastor, and we'd be at the church all the time, or we're reaching out with working with the kids or whatever we were doing, just busy, busy, busy. And I remember them pulling us aside, John and Marge Santos. I remember them pulling us aside and said, "You've got to slow down. You've got to make sure that you are spending time with each other." And it's not something that we always do perfectly, but we do do it. This is a part of our marriage. Usually at least once a week, we will go out on a date. We will do something. We will spend some time together. Probably the most common thing is on Monday mornings at Polly Pies for breakfast. But we will do something usually once a week. Now, I found something helpful on dating. This is a fellow I found on the internet. His name is Dr. Paul.
A romantic date, especially in the beginning, can be done in very unusual ways. And the perfect way is to not make it heavy. Keep it within bounds of being unintimidating, but at the same time, really romantic. Now, how do you do that? Let me give you some samples or examples. Let's say that you notice in your area there is a beautiful sunset at a particular place. Little picnic, you go up there, evening time, you sit down and talk to the person, listen to the person, have the repast that you brought, whatever it may be. Walk hand in hand down through the woods, the beach, whatever it might happen to be, and then you have had a romantic interlude. That's how to plan a romantic date. It's all about where and when. Not so much that it's expensive, because expensive means the other person may feel uncomfortable. It's more a matter of caring. Communicating caring in a romantic setting is more important than communicating money, expense. And besides, it's probably more interesting for the person to see that you are caring enough about them to do something different. Even a small thing, flying a kite on the beach or in a field or whatever you may happen to do, that's going to be impressive to the other person. That's romantic. These are the things you remember. By definition, in Dr. Paul's definition, romantic happens to be those things that you remember most in the beginning of your relationship. That's being romantic. Those are the things remembered. This is Dr. Paul.
Now, I've consulted some of my earlier consultants on what to do on a date. What do most people do on a date? This is from Martin, age 10. He says, on the first date, they just tell each other lies, and that usually gets them interested enough to go for a second date. No, don't do that one. This next one, though, is a real good one. This one's a keeper. Take notes here. This is from Craig, age 9. He says, many daters just eat pork chops and French fries and talk about love. There you go. What do I call going out on a date? Get out of the surroundings you're in. Get out of the places where you're distracted with stuff like phone calls. And I know it's hard when the kids are young, but if you can, if you can get a babysitter or something, leaving the house can be a good thing. Get away from the chores that you feel like you need to do. Do something special, you know, whether it's going to a restaurant or whether it's taking a walk or something. It doesn't have to cost anything but time. You know, it can be cheap, like going to Starbucks. Though I'm not sure that's so cheap. That's not so cheap. Yogurtland, maybe? I don't know. The key thing is spending time face-to-face talking. Movies are fun, but if you haven't spent time talking, then you're missing out on it. You know, movie and a dinner, that's cool. That's good. Movie and a burger or something, that's good, as long as you spend time talking, dating. This has all been about what works. And work implies effort. The things that we want in marriage don't happen magically on their own. You know, I like the eHarmony guy. I think he's got some cool commercials. But a good marriage is not just about compatibility. It's way bigger than that. It's about effort. It's about keeping things going. It's about cultivating your marriage. And these are some great stuff that these folks have come up with, don't you think? You know, good stuff to work at, things to put in effort, forgiveness, listening, making sure that God is your priority, what and when to talk, fellowship with other believers, with good Christians, and maybe go on a date every once in a while. Cultivate your relationships. Work at them. Let's stand and pray.